left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Yell. Aguila's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, friends, let's get it going. It is a Thursday, June 26th, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale's on now. Save big on safes, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Vix, it's your Christmas Eve.
Oh.
We're almost there, buddy. It is T-minus one day from the 2025 NHL Draft. Welcome aboard. Lots to talk about. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. The text line is open for you. If you're listening live, chime in at 960-960. Yes, Friday, draft day one. Saturday, draft day two. And the day before the 2025 NHL draft, not surprisingly, we heard from a very busy general manager, Craig Conroy, at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Both you and I were down at the Dome on Thursday afternoon, and we heard from the general manager, and we got lots to dive into. You know, we got some information, we got some updates in some cases, we got some non-updates in other cases, as you'd expect, but there is definitely a lot to sink your teeth into from about 11 minutes of Craig Conroy. Guy was absolutely slammed. Mm-hmm. The draft meetings and all that's what's going on. Craig only had enough time to come down, do that 10-15 minutes with us, and then head back upstairs to continue along with the pre-draft meetings. But yeah, there is definitely some talking points from the GM on this Thursday, wasn't there?
Well, it's crunch time with the draft coming up. As you mentioned, free agency right around the corner. Some guys are expiring, some guys are restricted free agents. You've got your final sort of clean up on your draft list to do, obviously, before the first round opens on Friday. So understandably, Craig Conroy could only carve out so much time for us. Grateful that he did. Gracious of him to do so. And it sets the tone, I think, both for the draft and for free agency, which will follow shortly thereafter.
Judging by my social media mentions, apparently I was in the camera shot that was...
were you on the left side or the right side?
So I was off to...
I was right beside you, wasn't I?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I avoided it because you're...
I was
you sidle
right
up.
Beside... I'm always the sidler, right?
Yeah.
I got my audio quality.
Yeah.
Apparently Sean Coville's shot that went live on sportsnet.ca may
well,
have included
live.
My mug. So
you're famous.
That's just
even
my
more
guess.
So.
That's just my guess. Based on some of the social media mentions I saw.
Like, do you have an Actors Guild card or something? Like, can you claim this? You got to get paid the minimum at worst for your on-air appearances?
That's a really good idea. I should look into that.
At least wear, like, a shirt that you can sell an ad on your one shoulder.
Yeah.
Bicep?
Like
your bicep?
When you used to have the iPhone case with FC hockey on it.
Yeah.
That was a great idea.
Well, there's a lot of people that still do that.
I know. It's a really
tradition.
Good idea.
I was just ahead of the curve. That's all.
Let's start with Rasmus Anderson, because mm-hmm. as soon as Craig came down, you knew the first thing that was going to be asked was about Rasmus Anderson. He remains the big story and will be the big story with this Flames team until a decision is made one way or the other. Either he gets traded or he signs a contract extension. There's been a lot of speculation and a lot of news over the last, say, 48 to 72 hours about how far apart the Flames and Anderson are in terms of contract discussions now that they've exchanged numbers. We've had a lot of talk about that,
yes.
Kind of the 8x9 on one side range, 6x7 on the other side in terms of the range. So, you know, there's definitely a gap between the two sides. And it's a tough situation for the GM. You know, he had to come and speak before the draft. But when it comes to talking about a guy who's still on your roster, who still has a year left
still
on his
contract,
but also there's tons of speculation around, the GM's got to be very careful in terms of what he says. You don't want to say anything to paint yourself into a corner. You don't want to say anything to lose leverage in potential trade talks. You don't want to say anything to lose leverage in potential contract
right.
talks. So you can't tip your hand one way or the other. You got to be really careful in Craig Conroy's situation. I thought he did a good job job of being as honest as he could in the situation. This was the general manager, Craig Conroy, the latest when it comes to Rasmus Anderson from the team's perspective.
Rass has got another year in his contract. And, you know, I talked to Rass this morning. He's totally, we're all good. If he's a Calgary Flame in September, he's a Calgary Flame. I mean, there's nothing that I would say is going to happen or not going to happen. You know, we would never do it in the media anyways, but yeah, we're just going to go about our business and try to, you know, make the team better. And we got with the draft coming up and then free agency, you know, you're always looking at all these different possibilities.
We hear the report that Elliot mentioned, and then in your conversation with Rasmus now, as you kind of pick up that conversation, what was that like to talk about either a fresh start or starting the season here?
Yeah, he was good. He's good. You know, the one thing is we have a good relationship, and it, you know, I was wondering how it was going to go, but it's great. I mean, he loves being a Flame. If he's a Flame next year, he's good with anything. He's wide open, and he's going to do his best, and he knows it's a contract year too, so he wants to have a great year. He wants to be in the Olympics. I mean, all those things are so important to him. So, you know, we're just, you know, we're going to keep going about our business to get ready for the draft and then free agency, and, you know, he's a Calgary Flame, like I said.
Is the door open still for an extension? There are reports that he might want a fresh start. Is there a possibility?
Well, I never want to close the door. You know, they're always open. You know, it's always about if he comes back, how the season goes, and there's always, yeah, we're never going to close the door. I'll just leave it at that, probably.
Are you worried at all by, you know, we've talked a lot about distractions, mm-hmm. knowing that he's got one foot out the door, potentially. Do you worry about opening the season with him being a distraction of any sort?
Nope, not at all, not with Razzie, because I know how important a season is for him, like, and that's what I think. He's a great teammate. You know, he's going to come here, he's a warrior. He'll play as hard as he can every night, and he wants to win. So, yeah, I don't worry. And I think, you know, maybe some of that, when you're talking about a few years ago, we had five UFAs, a little bit different. This would be totally fine.
So that is what the general manager had to say on the Rasmus Anderson situation. I think Craig did a good job of not tipping hands, not giving up leverage. He can't come out and say, and this is not a shot, because I love opinion, I love discourse, and it's part of what makes a show like this a lot of fun. But I have seen a lot of on social, like, this is ridiculous. How can Conroy not trade him? What is he doing? Craig's got no plan. This guy's got no direction. All I would say to that is, like, what did you want him to say in this situation publicly? As he said, nothing's going to happen. Nothing's not going to happen. And even if it were, I'm not going to tell you in the media. That does us no favors. Like, he can't paint himself into a corner. He needs to make sure that if he's dealing Rasmus Anderson, if that's the way it's going to go, he needs to make sure that he gets the best possible value. So for him to come out and say, actually, guys, like, we have to, I've been told that I have to trade Rasmus in the next 72 hours or else I don't know what's going to happen. Like, if he comes out and says, yeah, I need to trade him in the next 3 days. Well, now all of a sudden he's not going to get the same. Like, you can't put yourself in a situation where you publicly back yourself into a corner. Of course he's going to hedge bets. Of course he's going to keep doors open on both sides. Of course he's not going to sit here and tell us exactly what's happening. Here's the situation. We know they're far apart, Vix. We know that there's a very, 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 very good chance Rasmus Anderson is going to get traded between now and March. And I think you and I are on the same page that it's probably better to get it done this summer before training camp begins. But the most important thing is getting the type of value and getting the type of return that you have targeted for this player. And so if you're not going to get it between now and the end of the weekend, you don't trade him. And if you're not going to get it between now and the opening of free agency on Tuesday, then you don't trade him. And so coming out and telling us exactly what the plan is, how they're going to handle this, does you no favors, because then it gives up all your leverage and lets other teams in on the secret. And now all of a sudden they're playing from the same playbook, which does you no favors. So I don't know what else anyone was expecting the GM to say in a situation like this. It's a tough one. You got to tap dance. You've got to be delicate. You also know that you're speaking to your fans, so you need to give them something. I think we all know what's going on, and I think it is important that the GM continues to underline the fact that if Rasmus Anderson is still here come training camp. They're comfortable with it. Rasmus is comfortable with it. He's got a year on his contract. And so if that's what it's going to take to get maximum value for your asset, then everybody's comfortable doing that. I think that's a really important message that was conveyed on Thursday.
Listen, I'm no PR expert. I'm no media relations guru, but even I could have sat down and wrote the script that Craig Conroy played from today, because you're absolutely right. He knows he has to say something. He knows he's going to be asked it, and he knows he doesn't want to give up anything that can affect the situation at hand. He can't go, yeah, we're going to deal him at the draft, and then all of a sudden the 2, 3, 4 teams perhaps that are interested go, okay, well, you just put yourself up against an artificial deadline for no reason whatsoever. We can exploit that. Or you can't go, we're not comfortable with Rasmus Anderson coming into camp next September because it'll be too much of a distraction, because now you're putting an artificial deadline on it again. The only true deadline here is the 2026 NHL trade deadline. And if you say anything otherwise that expedites that deadline, you're doing yourself a disservice. You're doing the team a disservice. And to be quite honest, you're doing Rasmus Anderson a disservice too, because if you say, I'm going to deal Rasmus Anderson before training camp, then day one, Rasmus Anderson's at training camp. Not only do you answer those questions, Rasmus Anderson answers those questions. And suddenly the guy that you didn't think would be a distraction, and we all agree, I think it's fair to say, we don't expect Rasmus Anderson to be any sort of distraction. If he is in camp in September with the Calgary Flames, knowing his character, knowing what a big year it is for him, both on the free agent front and the Olympic front, knowing about how he's built and how we feel, how he understands the business side of the game as much as the actual playing side of the game. It would not have behooved Craig Conroy at all in any aspect to say, we need to move this guy by X date.
I agree. And I just think, like, being too critical on what a GM says in a tough situation like this makes no sense to me. Judge on the moves, judge on the decision, judge on the outcome, judge on the return, on the contract, whatever. But, like, when everybody's speculating about one of your players who's under contract, there's only so much a GM is going to say. And that would be the same for any general manager in the league. I don't think you were going to get much more from any other guy. So I thought the GM handled that well. So that's the Anderson front. What about some of the pending unrestricted free agents the Flames have on the docket? Let's start with Dan Vladar, as the GM was asked about, you know, where things sit on Dan Vladar, who is a pending UFA on Tuesday. Is the door still open for a return for now? Number 80.
We had a contract offer out to Dan, so, you know, it's, you know, we love Dan. You know, Dan's done a great job for us. But again, you know, it's an opportunity to become a UFA and be a free agent. You know, I think with the way Wolfie played, definitely affected things too. You know, he definitely wants to be a starter in the league, and that's his goal.
So the Flames know what's going on here. The Flames would love to have Dan Vladar back. I think I know for a fact that the number one desire for the Flames would be to go into the year next year with a tandem of Wolf and Vladar once again. But it's not just up to them. And as you just heard the GM say, as we've been saying since April, the big thing here is, what does Dan want and how much does playing time play into what his decision's going to be? And the GM just talked about it right there. I believe that they have had both 1 and 2 year deals on the table to Vladar. I believe that in both cases, the AAV is higher than the $2.2 million that he's been on the last couple of years. So they've put contract offers on the table that have been raises on the average annual value. There have been 1 and 2 year deals. Like, they've put things on the table. I don't know exactly what the terms are, but they've put deals in front of the Vladar camp to this point. An agreement hasn't been made. Team believes they put some really fair offers on the table, and there's no hard feelings because they understand they've got a franchise goalie who finished number 2 in Calder Trophy voting in Dustin Wolf, and Dan Vladar is not going to be the number 1 here. That's it. Like, Dan, the plan is not for Dan Vladar to be the number 1. The plan is for Dustin Wolf to be this team's franchise goalie for the next decade and a half. And thus, if Dan Vladar is okay staying here with a raise and with some security, the Flames would love to have him back. If he wants to go look for other playing time elsewhere, the Flames are happy to say all the power to you. Like, and not in like a snarky way, but shake the guy's hand, say, hey, dude, you've been great for us for the last 4 years. Thank you so much for everything. Good luck. And we hope that you end up finding that playing time. So do I. I love Dan Vladar. I love dealing with him. I think he's been a great soldier. I think he's given them some really strong minutes. And if those minutes, if there are more minutes that materialize elsewhere, then I'm really happy for them. And the Flames have their contingency plans. Jordan Sigalette and the goaltending department, they've had contingency plans since like a year ago. They know what's going on.
Yep.
They have their plans, whether it's Prospetov or somebody else. They have contingency plans. They will bring somebody else in, and they'll have Cooley and somebody else and Wolf come training camp and figure it out from there as to who's going to be behind Dustin Wolf. But yeah, there's obviously, they have a contract on the table. They'd like Dan to sign it, but if he doesn't, they understand, and they're very well prepared for Dan Vladar to be elsewhere come July 1st.
If I'm putting myself in Vladar's skates, it's the ultimate debate between comfort and opportunity. And if you feel like you can be a 1A or a number one goalie, and you have to sacrifice the comfort of the place you've called home for the last 4 or 5 years to go see what that is, that's something that you have to weigh. You have to weigh the dollars as well. You have to weigh the term as well. All these things. And if you're Vladar and you've got an inkling that if you go to market, you might find what you're looking for in terms of opportunity. And I like that. I like the player betting on himself. I like the player wanting to be more in the picture. Not to say that he wouldn't be in Calgary, but you mentioned it. Dustin Wolf is the franchise goaltender for what the Flames hope to be the next dozen years or so. So if you're Vladar and you're in your late 20s and you're still looking to seize an opportunity, I can appreciate a guy being that competitive and betting on himself, finding that option. Now, if you don't find it, or if you get an inkling that that opportunity is not going to be available for you, I don't fault a guy for coming back to a situation with the Flames where he has said nothing but glowing things. But again, I talked to him at the World Championship. We talked to him on Locker Cleanout. He's well aware of who the other guy is in net in Calgary and what that does or doesn't do for opportunity.
Yep.
On the short term and the long term. So while I agree with you, I think the best case scenario from a Flames perspective would be to run a Wolf-Vladar tandem next year. I can't fault a guy if he chooses to go
out. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And neither can the Flames, and neither will they. Okay, so that's one pending UFA. Also got some news on a couple of pending UFA forwards in Anthony Mantha and Kevin Rooney, who are both pending UFAs on Tuesday.
With the amount of contracts we have, probably both those guys, the doors close a little bit on them. But, you know, they were great for us. They did an amazing job. And, you know, just doesn't feel like at this time it's a fit. Plus, we want to see, and it's never out of the question. And, you know, after July 1st, things always change. You get some players, you don't get other players. So, you know, those guys were great players for us, and could always look at it. But as of today, they'll probably hit the market.
Which is the right decision. I can tell you that that you can also add Joel Hanley to that mix. So Joel Hanley, Anthony Mantha, Kevin Rooney will all very likely be hitting the market door. As Connie said, the door is closed a little bit on all three guys. You can add Joel Hanley to that mix. He's expected to hit the market as well. And in all three cases, it makes sense. They got too many contracts. They've got a desire to get younger. They've got a desire to add more youth to the organization. And as it stands right now, this is the right call. And they also have some targets to potentially get younger via free agency. And they'd like to keep the door open for some trades and all that type of stuff. And they were pretty jammed up on the blue line this year. And so I think they'd like to be a little bit less jammed up next year. So you can understand why a guy like Joel Hanley would be potentially moving on. At the same time, they want to open the door for some younger players at forward. They'd like to have Adam Klapka be a full-time guy, all those types of things. Probably not a lot of room for Rooney or for Mantha as it stands right now. Plus, they just brought Kirkland back, and he was the one guy that probably made the most sense to bring back.
Yeah, you've already, in my opinion, you've already backfilled those positions in terms of Mantha. Coronado filled that the moment Mantha went down, so that takes away an opportunity in the top six for Mantha, so suddenly he doesn't necessarily make sense. And then you look at Rooney, as you mentioned, they've just re-upped Kirkland, who I think takes that fourth line center spot, so perhaps Rooney becomes redundant in your organization. And Hanley, I can see the situation where you want like a Kuznetsov or a Solovyov. to present an opportunity for one of those two players to step into some minutes, or maybe even go and look outside of the organization, as you mentioned, with a young free agent or two to see what you can bring in on the open market on that front. It's just a situation where you look at those three guys that you mentioned, you check the birth certificates, you look what you have already inside the organization, and you go, is this a necessity or is this just doing something for the sake of doing something? And that doesn't stop them from maybe missing out or not being able to accomplish what they want to after July 1 opens up. But for the time being, it makes sense to maybe turn the page.
Yeah. And as Conroy said, like there's the doors open to potentially circle back once free agency's open. Look, Mantha was brought in to give them a little depth, maybe see if they could kind of revitalize the career, potentially a pump-up target, the trade deadline,
yep.
Or maybe they find chemistry with Jonathan Huberdeau, and it just is, hey, now Mantha's a Flame. Problem is, and it sucks, but Mantha sustained a season-ending injury early on. We never really got to see what it was going to be. And then Matt Coronato emerged as a bona fide top six forward, and Adam Klapka emerged as a guy who should be on this roster. And I mean, who knows? Could Matvei Gridin knock on the door at training camp? Sam Hanzek, so on and so forth. It just for both Mantha and Rooney. And again, Rooney gets hurt in game one of the season, and Justin Kirkland was an upgrade on him. And Kirkland added something that really nobody else did in the ability to win games in a shootout. And so choosing a younger Kirkland as your number 4C going forward made sense. It just, this one, and as we talked about on the blue line, whether it's Kuznetsov or Solovyov or Grishnikov or somebody else that they sign in free agency, Hanley had a great year and I think is going to get some looks in free agency.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Maybe the Flames do circle back on him after July 1. But as of right now, it makes sense for him to for the team to see what other options could possibly exist.
Yeah, and to be perfectly honest, the least surprising news of the day from my perspective, one, Craig wasn't going to say anything about Rasmus Anderson, but two, the fact that, okay, we're probably moving on from Mantha and Rooney was a foregone conclusion, perhaps, from my perspective, and mm-hmm. maybe I was jumping the gun a little bit and thinking that, but you just look at what you have up front on the right side for the Flames, and then you look at Kirkland coming back and basically penciling him in as the fourth line center as it stands right now. You just don't see the room for some of the other guys.
What about some of the RFAs? RFAs that are still important would be, or not important, but like the highest profile RFAs.
Priorities are pressing.
Yes. Kevin Ball on defense, Connor Zeri and Morgan Frost up front. Specifically Zeri and Ball, this is what the GM had to say.
No real updates. We've been in contact. I think with Zeri, we just got, we're trying to get the other guys maybe ahead a little bit, try to get them going, but I think we'll get those guys done. We're just working away at it, but with all the draft stuff and it's been a busy week, but hopefully we can get it done sooner than later.
Doesn't seem, I know that there is anytime things drag on for a few months, like what's going on, I think that things will get done with Zeri's camp. The Ball one's really interesting. I think the Flames would like to go long-term if they could. But I think in the Ball on the Ball conversation, what does that number look like on a long-term? And I think that, again, I think both sides would be okay with going long 5-6 years on an extension. But what does that number look like? That I think, much like Zeri, where I think that both sides are probably pretty resigned to it being a 2-year deal or a bridge deal. It's all about what that actual AAV number is going to look like. I think that's kind of where the conversations would be held up, so on and so forth, when it comes to these conversations. Frost is still the one that is, and I know that Connie didn't address Morgan Frost there, but Frost is the one that is still so fascinating to me. I don't know what the hell you do with that guy. I'd be comfortable if the Flames went 5 or 6 years on Ball. I think that would probably be good for both sides. You'd understand, as we talked about on Wednesday, why Zeri would be a bridge if that's the way it ends up going. I don't know what you do with Frost. I really don't.
That's I'm not going to sit here and tell you what you should be thinking on it, because I'm kind of similar in the sense, like if I'm Frost's camp, I might want to go bridge too and see if you can't, with more opportunity and a fresh start and a full summer to prepare for a move like we saw. And we know how long it can take a player to adjust to a new environment. If I'm Froskamp, I could see wanting to bet on myself. I'm a big believer, it turns out, in all these conversations that we have on betting on yourself. And I could see a scenario where Frost is suddenly above that 50-point threshold, and maybe that puts him into a higher tax bracket. But just generally in talking about these, you know, pending restricted free agents, there's no real deadline as it stands on June 26th that you've got to be nervous about. So understandably, you've got your draft stuff you've got to do. You've got your free agent prep that you've got to do. And that's not to say that these three players aren't important in the big picture. You just have more concrete deadlines that you're working on that might take some attention away. And there are negotiations for a reason, too. We're not just sitting here and going, okay, you say one number, I say one number. We're just going to half that right in the middle, and that's what it's going to be. They're negotiations for a reason.
On the text line at 960-960, Matt and Cochran says, Anderson hasn't come off like a sourpuss like Lindholm did so far. I'll reserve judgment if Raz is here without an extension come September. Look, having really enjoyed covering Rasmus from day one as a member of the Calgary Flames. I will always remember day one, him being drafted, talking to him on the phone. And first of all, you're like, oh, damn, this guy speaks better English than I do. And then two, you're like, this guy's got something about him. There's a swagger, but it's like a professional swagger. And he has had that the entire time. And I have thoroughly enjoyed getting the opportunity to cover Rasmus Anderson in this job. I think he is the consummate pro, and I don't see this guy being anything but that same consummate pro if he remained a member of the Flames beyond this summer. And I think he would go out of his way to remain being a pro, not become a distraction, not, to use Matt and Cochran's words, become a sourpuss. I think that he would handle it exactly the way you'd want him to handle it.
Well, and he's also, from his own personal perspective, even park the team aspect, he's got a lot riding on this season coming up, becoming a pending unrestricted free agent at season's end. He was the captain of Sweden at the World Championship, and he absolutely wants a crack at being on that team for the Olympics. And then again, it goes back to his makeup of how he's built. Now, if we roll into September and he's still a member of the Calgary Flames, I could see his first media avail being a little bit prickly to us, to maybe set a tone of, we're going to talk about this once and then it's done.
Yep.
That doesn't transfer over into the locker room from my perspective.
Agreed.
He is one of those leaders for a reason. And if there's one player on the Flames that I could see parking all this noise and all this distraction and all this speculation, to be honest, it's Rasmus Anderson.
This says, Conroy said exactly what he should have said. You guys nailed that. Flames have to move Anderson before the season starts, though. No need to take unneeded risks. Could be a seller's market like it was 2 years ago. This says, to be honest, I forgot Mantha was a Flame until you said his name. This from Jordan in Coquitlam. I'm super happy for the Flames and Kirkland that he got extended, and I think he'll be great in that 4C spot. Do you guys think if Morton shows he's capable at camp, he might be able to get into some games every now and then to spot in for Kirkland, or would he be more someone who would be called up only if needed, injury, etc.? Honestly, man, Jordan, I think that if he shows well in camp, I think that he'll get time. And much like they made way for Sam Hanzek last year in camp, or 2 years ago, Coronado in camp, Craig Conroy, Ryan Huska have shown that if you're deserving of a spot out of camp, you'll be in camp. And you'll be on the roster. And then things could change. But yeah, I think if Sam Morton has a good camp, he can be a fourth line option for him next year as well.
I don't think there's anything in the way of a player 26 or under that is going to happen that's going to inhibit them from playing minutes in the NHL if, as you say, they prove that they're capable and ready, and then it would be on the player to make sure that there's no drop off and to not give the Flames a reason to do something else.
We are underway this hour on Flames Talk. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Well, as we have said, and as you know without me having to tell you, it is T-minus one day from the 2025 NHL Draft. Friday, round one. Saturday, rounds two through seven. We'll have full coverage for you here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. And lots to dive into as the intrigue of who the Flames are going to select at number 18 remains very high. And there's a lot of intrigue as to who is going number two overall once Matthew Schaefer gets selected by the New York Islanders at number one overall. Lots to dive into with our next guest. Always a pleasure to check in with Stephen Ellis of Daily Faceoff, their prospects editor and prospects expert. He joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now. Steve, always appreciate the time. It's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers. How is the early stretches of L.A.? How are they treating you so far?
Well, so far, the weather's been incredible. When I left Toronto area a couple days ago, it was like 37 degrees Celsius. I come here, it's 21. I'll start with a breeze any day.
Yep, 100%. And I'm happy that you were able to escape the Northeast heat wave. That is good to hear. Hey, set the scene for us. In LA, you're there. You've caught up with some prospects already as the prospects availability went on Thursday. Just kind of like set the scene for us in what we hope is the first and last decentralized non-COVID draft.
Yeah, like the players this morning, they're pretty relaxed. At this point, none of this is in their control. On the other hand, I'm expecting full chaos tomorrow. We could see a bunch of trades, which I never really believed given the lack of actual big trades in the top 10 of the draft over the last decade or so. I think we're going to see some surprises. I know the big question right now is Anton Friendell going number two or is he going number three? And it's the most unpredictable draft I've ever covered, which makes it fun and a little harder to prepare for. But I think that also makes it just a lot more interesting tomorrow.
It's funny when Craig Conroy, the GM of the Flames, spoke with us earlier on this Thursday, I asked him, like, hey, is all this buzz about potentially teams moving up, the ability to move up even into the top 10, is that accurate? Is that kind of the way that you're reading the situation? He said, yeah, I mean, there's obviously still not going to be easy, but it feels like maybe the appetite is there. That comes from a GM, and that kind of that checks with what you're hearing too, hey?
Yeah, you look at Pittsburgh, they get two picks right outside the top 10. Obviously, the Islanders, they've got Noah Dobson in a trade situation here. They land another top 7 pick and maybe get James Higgins and make the marketing team really happy that way. Montreal Canadiens have two picks back-to-back, and I know they want to get a top 6 forward, and they could probably do that by trading those picks. So I think this is going to be the year where you can move up without having to give up a crazy amount of assets because it isn't as great of a draft. But I think at that time, some teams that have done their extra research or extra homework and think maybe they could find a hidden gem could really capitalize this year.
You mentioned Friendell. Lots of rumors floating around now about player X to team Y. Whether we're speaking about Friendell specifically or just generally with sort of the buzz and the rumors that are circulating right now, how much are you buying into it and how much are you using caution in what we're hearing?
I feel pretty confident at this point that we're going to see specifically Friendell taken at number two or number three, but I pulled some people around the league today and I'm like, if you had to bet your life at him going there at who San Jose would take at number two or number three, I got two different answers. So a bunch of people, unfortunately, they got nothing to live for at this point. It's something where Friendell at two, I don't love. I think I'd like Mesa a lot more there. But like at the same time, there's a lot of allure after watching Barkov win his second Stanley Cup final. And I know Fundell is not Barkov 100%, especially on the skating side, but there's some similarities in the way that he can act as a power forward. And I think in that case, like, I know I wasn't super high on the way Fundell's season ended, outside of obviously winning the Allsvenskan, but I look at this there and saying, like, there's too much smoke here to not be, or too much fire here, I guess I'd say, to Fundell at number two or number three.
Are you convinced that he's a center at the NHL level in 57 games this season, either the J20 or in Allsvenskan? He only took 18 faceoffs total. Is that a situational thing with a young player primarily playing pro, or do you see him skewing more as a winger?
Yeah, you'd see a lot of cases where he would take the face off, but then he would cross over and then kind of play more down the middle. And I think for me, it always feels like he's going to be a better winger. I like watching him on the power play where he could just fire those shots and in a good scoring situation. And I feel like in some cases, I would almost be okay taking some of the responsibility away from him and just say, hey, focus on trying to be the physical dominant self that you know you can be and use that ability to drive right to the net and create opportunities. But I do like that he's got the flexibility of both center and the wing, just like Michael Misa, who played almost all of last year on the wing before moving to center. So that type of flexibility definitely helps.
Another name you mentioned, James Hagans, potentially linked again to the New York Islanders, the hometown kid. As you mentioned, a PR boom for the organization if they find a way to add another pick and use it on him. His profile tends to be sliding right now. Is that a result of the player, or is that a result of the teams in and around that top five wanting a player who maybe fits a little bit different role?
I think that it's a bunch of everything. Like, obviously, he didn't have a dominant season this year, but I wrote about it in an article today where it feels like maybe he almost set expectations too high, given how good he was at the U17, U18 level at the NTDP, where, okay, if he doesn't have explosive numbers at Boston College, then is it going to be seen as a failure? And then he hits a point per game. Like, he still had a pretty solid freshman season, right, but he didn't dominate. He didn't dominate like a lot of these other guys did. And when you look at Michael Misa putting up over 130 points in the OHL, and even to like a lesser extent, like Justin Carboneau scoring 46 goals in the Q, you look at that and say, okay, well, you wanted more, and especially with the guys that he played with, and Ryan Leonard and Gabe Perreault, two of the best players in college hockey. But he's not big, but he can make up for it with his hockey sense and his skating and his everything else. Like, this play with the puck is still impressive. And I think that when you're looking at comparables, which I don't love, you know, you see a bit of Jack Hughes, you see a bit of Logan Cooley, and those are the names that keep getting mentioned. And you look at those guys, they're pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm. Frondell, Hagan seem to be, at least from Calgary. Again, you're in LA, I'm a little bit further away, but those two players seem like the biggest newsmakers for kind of opposite reasons. Is there another player that's sort of getting a little bit of buzz down there as we get to within 24 hours of draft day?
Well, I think Roger McQueen's going to be the hot topic until he actually gets drafted. You know, questions about if he's going to be fully healthy to be at 100%. I know some teams are in the 8 to 15-ish range that are like, you know, I would be a little concerned taking him. And other teams looking at this and saying, hey, like, let's try and bank high on talent here. The upside's huge. If it works out, it works out. If it doesn't, well, you know, it happens, unfortunately. Another one is Jake O'Brien. I know Nashville specifically wants a centerman. At first, Porter Martone seemed like a good fit, but it doesn't seem like that's the guy they would target. So would they go out there and get someone like Jake O'Brien, who can, I feel like, is underrated? Like, he had like the quietest 98-point season you're going to see in the CHL, where he just kept setting Nick Laridis up. Like, you'll need a shooter to work with, but I think that he'd be a really key piece for Nashville. So I'd say those are the two names I'm looking at in that like 5 to 10 range.
Let me ask you this, because at the end of the day, I don't get fired if I push for a guy that's high. You're probably not likely to lose your job if you put together your rankings and push for a guy that's high. In terms of some of these boom bust type prospects, whether you want to include McQueen with the injury history on it or another high upside, low floor kind of guy, what's your risk reward tolerance when you're building your rankings?
Well, it's interesting. Look at someone like Brady Martin. Brady Martin's one of my favorite players in this draft, maybe my favorite. And I get the concerns for him. He's not the world's greatest skater, and he's probably not going to be a high-end play driver, but he does a lot for the Sioux Greyhounds. And then when you put him at the Helenka Gretzky or you put him at the under-18s, he was one of Canada's best players in both tournaments, and that's some quality players he had to play against. So you look at him, it's like, okay, well, the upside is not huge. He's probably not going to have a 90-point season in the NHL, and realistically not many guys from this draft will, but he's not, probably not going to be one of the higher end offensive guys. So you got to look at the intangibles. You got to look at the things like the physicality, how hard he hits, the work ethic, the guy who wants to go out there and win every single shift. And then you go and look at what the Florida Panthers have built. Now, that's just one example, but they've made the Stanley Cup final three times. They've won two of them. I'd say they're doing a pretty good job. And you look at the guys that are such a key part of that Cup win this year. In reality, it wasn't Barkov. It wasn't Tkachuk. It was, you know, Brad Marchand. It was Etu Lesterinen in a way. It was Sam Bennett, those guys. And you see a little bit of that hardworking nature in someone like Brady Martin. So it's trying to measure, like, the high upside, and then you're also looking at the guys who – at the floor are going to be good NHL players. Like, I think Shane Van Sauge, a guy who might go in the second round, is going to be a good NHL player or good enough to be a full-time NHLer. Is he going to be an impact NHL player? You know, there's probably guys around that 30 to 40 range that will be much more impactful. But I think that at the very minimum, he's going to be an NHL player and he's going to get some stuff done maybe in a third or fourth line role. So kind of juggling, you know, the upside versus the translatable skills and trying to be able to make that as effective as possible. That's the most difficult thing.
From a Calgary Flames perspective, you've got a mock draft, your final mock draft dropping Friday morning. Just curious from a Calgary Flames perspective, if you can tip your hat a little bit, maybe give us a little bit of a teaser in terms of what Flames fans can expect out of your latest and final mock, which again, will drop roughly 12 hours-ish before we actually see the real thing.
So basically that first pick, again, assuming they keep them both picks, who knows? We never seem to know this year. It came down to me for two players, Braden Coutts and Benjamin Kindle. And those are the two guys that felt like a good fit. One of them, the 99-point guy who obviously the Calgary Flames would have had a lot of opportunities to see, given that Kindle plays for the Hitmen. And then there's Braden Coutts, who I feel like is a bit more of a versatile all-around forward who, if he's not in a scoring situation, he could be a really good energy guy. And for me, I'm looking at Kindle and saying, I feel like there's a bit more upside. And if it's close between those two, you'd pick that guy. Cole Reschnew probably is in that argument there too. And so like, if you're looking for a center, there are some good options. I do wonder if they move up. I don't know if they will, but they've got some good options kind of in that range for 18. That's interesting. And I would look at one player, if they want to hit high with that second pick, look at Riker Lee. And He's someone who, like 4 years ago or 3 or 4 years ago, was like 5'3". He's 6 foot now. That's a lot of growth. Is he done? He doesn't think so. So if he continues to grow, this is a guy that's got the pure skill and the speed that you really crave. And once that full frame kind of comes in and he learns to play like that, he could be a really good value guy too.
The one thing I love you said there was, if they keep both picks, there's many teams with multiple firsts. We know there's a handful of players that are being rumored about in the 24 hours prior to the draft. I'm just curious, are we set for a lot of unpredictability when we get to finally announcing the pick beyond one, whether it be surprise selections, whether it be teams moving up, whether it be NHL ready personnel moving out the door? How much unpredictability are you willing to bank on tomorrow?
More than usual. And that is something that I usually go into these things expecting nothing to happen. But right, this year truly feels like there's a lot that's going to happen. What's going to happen? Who knows? I don't know if the teams know, but like, we've heard that Utah's pick is in play. We like Nashville, Boston, those are other teams I could see potentially moving their picks to get more immediate help. The Flyers have what feels like 300 picks in the first round. Maybe they use those picks. Montreal, Calgary, like there's a lot of teams that you can make a case for making a trade. But then you go out there and look at the trade that just happened last night and with JJ Paterka and what the value was in that trade. It makes you wonder, like, really? Like, okay, maybe we don't need to see these high-end picks traded. But I don't know. This is not the year where you're going to get a ton of value for these picks. But again, teams might be able to take advantage of that.
When you are sitting at the bar at midnight on Friday night, what are you most excited to have answered for you? What's the biggest question on day one of the draft that will be answered when you're just winding things down and getting ready for day two?
Well, I'm hoping I'm sleeping at that point, given it's an early day two here. But
yeah, it's a 9 a.m. start for you there.
Yeah, I'm not close to the place either. It's like a nice half hour walk. So we'll see. We'll see. But I think with this one, it'll be interesting to see kind of what goalies are on the board. with Joshua Ravensbergen feels like the one goalie that's a safe pick for number one. Mm-hmm. But I've heard a lot about Frolov, the Russian goaltender, being a potential first-round pick. I don't know if I would do that necessarily. I've seen some really wonky games out of him this year. But I will always point out that I'm a big Jack Ivankovic fan.
Yes.
I would love to see which team takes a chance on him. When he goes to these showcase events, he shows up. And you'd love to see that. And I watched him a lot in Brampton. I don't know if any superstar NHL goaltender, Ty Conklin, Carey Price, Henrik Lundqvist, you name it, had to do that for you. It doesn't matter which goalie's in net. I don't think it would have mattered because Brampton allowed a lot of high-quality chances. But, yeah, I like Ivankovic. So we'll see what goalies are available early in the second round.
Last question for you. One of your contemporaries, Scott Wheeler, was with us on Wednesday's show, Steve, and we're talking with Stephen Ellis of Daily Faceoff, their prospects editor, and helping us set up the class of 2025 in the NHL draft. And he went on a pretty impassioned rant about how the decentralized nature of this year's draft just doesn't have the same buzz as a normal NHL draft has been to. You've been to enough of them. Vix has been to enough of them. I've been to enough of them. It's just there's something about having all 32 teams with multiple personnel in the same city and then having everybody in, you know, walking distance of a rink and you're seeing people everywhere you go. There's a buzz about being in a city, and it's different this year. Yeah, the prospects are there and there's some team personnel in Los Angeles, but it's not the same. Everybody, for the most part, is staying in their home cities. What's your feel on the decentralized nature of the 2025 draft?
It's a lot of people around teams are like, dang, we wish we were here right now. And I get it. It feels so different. You feel Vegas last year and everything felt special and everyone was looking forward to going to the Sphere and how cool that was. But you also have the NHL awards as part of that too. So at least I know from like a media side, you see everyone. Everyone's there. All the teams are represented. Like that's special. It feels more important. And when there's more media there, there's a lot more people talking about it in general. Montreal, Nashville, again, those are fantastic years. This doesn't feel special at all. Like going to the media room today after the media availability and there was like nobody there. And I remember like going to Montreal in particular and seeing like 20 to 50 kids lined out at the hotel just hoping to get an autograph from a player. Like you're not getting that here. It's not a knock against LA by any means. It's more of, it just doesn't feel like an important event this year. And like the fact that we don't know what it's going to be like actually on draft day compared to like what you see in the NFL, and it's kind of the same thing every year. It's really different. And I don't know. It's just, we'll see kind of what it's like on the floor. I don't know enough about the Peacock Theater to see what it's going to be like, but I hope they make it special for the players that are there because it's still a big deal. It would feel weird to go from that massive show last year at the Sphere to something significantly worse for the players in attendance this year.
Yeah. Well said. Nonetheless, enjoy yourself. Hey, have fun. And we'll be watching. We will be keeping an eye on all of your content over at Daily Faceoff. You can catch Steve's work over on social media. Check him out on Twitter at @SEllisHockey. Appreciate the time as always, Steve. Enjoy the rest of your time in California. Hey.
Yeah. Thanks so much, guys.
Stephen Ellis of Daily Faceoff helps get us set for the 2025 NHL draft, which just happens to be Friday and Saturday. He joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery. It is too bad. It's not a FOMO thing. It's not a, I wish I was there. We're making the right call by not being in LA. Like for us, it's better to be where the team is, especially if a big news story happens. Like for our purposes, Flames Talk covers the draft, but we cover the draft surrounding the Calgary Flames. And if the Flames were in LA, we'd be in LA. The Flames are staying back here, so we'll stay back here. We're going to be doing our draft coverage from the Scotiabank Saddle Dome on Friday and Saturday, and I'm looking forward to it. But it doesn't have the same type of buzz. And you know what? Maybe that's because we're media dorks, and maybe as a fan, it feels completely the same. And I do think that's important sometimes. It's just I am the thing I'm most interested about is not how it comes off to me, the broadcaster, because who cares? But how does it come off to you, the fan? And does it maybe it comes off better? Like maybe when it's all said and done,
maybe
the way they go about it, like Lanny's going to be announcing Calgary's pick, and Nikki Glaser's going to be announcing St. Louis's pick, and so on and so forth. That one's for you.
Me?
That one's for you, Craig. But I wonder what it's going to be like. I wonder. Some fans love the idea of looking at the draft floor, and there's Craig Conroy talking to Bill Zito, and now he's talking to GM Patrick Alvin or whoever. Maybe it'll be better. And if that's the case, if it's a better experience for the fans, then keep doing it that way. But I do like the uniqueness of the way the NHL draft has gone over the and the way they've done it for the last, 20, 30 years.
Well, and the bar is just right now so high coming off the Sphere in Vegas. Like, being in person, it was awesome. Obviously, I didn't get to see it on TV, but all the reports were that the presentation just blew everything out of the water. There's a lot of pressure following up something like that, especially when you go to decentralized, especially when you don't have the shot from above of all 32 teams on the floor, and GM X is talking to GM Y, and you're seeing all sorts of action happening. Bar is high.
Yep. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on the program. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickershan. Virgie Cam Hughes, our outstanding producers. And this hour's been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale's on now. Save big on safes, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.